You are now in Spring City, population about 800. Be sure that you turn right onto Main Street and proceed southward. Spring City owes its name to the spring on the right-hand corner of Main and 100 North that is marked by a Daughters of the Utah Pioneers monument. The most imposing building in town is the 1914 Romanesque Revival-style Spring City Ward Chapel. You pass the chapel on your right between 100 and 200 South. The entire village of Spring City is the Spring City Historic District, so designated by the National Register of Historic Places. It was given this status in 1980 because it retains so many elements of the classic Mormon village. You can pick up copies of a walking tour at Horseshoe Mountain Pottery. It is on the right-hand side of Main Street, between 200 and 300 South. Spring City was originally settled in 1852. It had a tumultuous first two decades due to the Walker and Black Hawk Wars, and it was abandoned and resettled several times. Among its earliest citizens were 50 Danish settlers sent from Salt Lake as reinforcements during the Walker War. In the early years, Spring City was almost entirely Danish north of 200 South, and the area was known as Little Denmark. This is reflected in the number of historic houses that display elements of Danish vernacular style. English settlers lived south of that boundary in an area called Allred Bound, or Hyde Bound, after two pioneer leaders, James Allred and Orson Hyde. Many of Spring City's historic structures are built of adobe, formed from local clay, or from locally quarried oolitic limestone. In recent years, many of the homes have been restored, some by local people, and some by part-time residents from the Wasatch Front. Many Spring City residents are painters or other artists who have been drawn to the area for its beauty. Through their numbers, they have developed a small artists' colony. Among them are Lee Udall Benyon, a painter, and her husband, Joe Benyon, a potter. They moved here in the 1970s. Lee explains how the ambiance of Spring City contributes to her work.
As far as my work goes, and I feel like I'm living out my childhood dreams, I wanted to be an artist since the time I was fairly young. Living here in Spring City is very conducive to my work. My work and subject matter is basically myself and my family and my life around me. I remember reading a quote from Vanessa Bell. She was Virginia Woolf's sister and was a painter and worked with the Bloomsbury Group over in London. And she said at one point that she didn't feel it was any necessity to look any further than her front doorstep for subject matter. That rung a bell with me, and I've always felt that way. And, you know, you look around at my paintings, and they're basically what's around me, flowers from the garden, still lifes. Quite often they're from my head, but I take elements and pieces that are around me in my life and then combine them. And then I use myself and my kids and family and friends a lot as models.
You are now in an area that has had little settlement, mainly due to its poor soil. The vegetation includes scattered Utah juniper and pinyon pine. The latter produces delicious pine nuts. If the summer climate has been just right, the pinyons can yield a bountiful harvest of nuts. Local people gather and bag them and sell them from roadside stands in the fall. An important quarry, not visible from the road, lies to your right, about halfway between Spring City and the next junction. It was the source of much of the fine yellow oolitic limestone used for building the larger of Spring City's historic homes. Portions of the land south of Spring City comprise the Ephraim Wildlife Management Unit. The next town that you will enter, in about 7 miles, will be Ephraim, the largest town in the San Pete Valley. The name Ephraim is important in the Mormon religion. It refers to a biblical tribe of Israel, descendants of Ephraim, younger son of Joseph, who was sold into Egypt. Mormons believe that they are spiritually descended from the tribes of Israel, and most Latter-day Saints in Utah believe they specifically belong to the tribe of Ephraim. Perhaps another reason the early settlers chose this name for their town is that the biblical land of Ephraim, in central Palestine, was the richest, and the Ephraimites were envied by other tribes. The Mormon hymn, Ye Elders of Israel, refers both to taking possession of the sacred land of Ephraim and leaving worldly Babylon behind. Here it is, sung by men from the five ward choirs of Ephraim. Depending on the season, you may see sheep pastured in this area. In early summer, sheep are moved into the higher elevations to return in the fall. As sheepman Ralph Lund of Ephraim explains this process, you will approach the junction known as Pigeon Hollow. It is named after the great flocks of now extinct passenger pigeons that once gathered here. At the stop sign, be sure to turn left or south toward Ephraim on US 89.
Sheep business is migratory. In the winter, we go out 300-400 miles, almost clear in the southwest end of the state to the winter range, desert. And they used to train them. It'd take almost 2 weeks for them to walk out, walk back. We put them in these semi trucks, bring them in one day now. About 1,500. We line the sheep out beginning middle of March and on through to about the 1st of May. Well, the docking, cut the tails off, castrate them after about 6 weeks. Now, you see them West Mountains. In about a week, our sheep will be up on those mountains. And they'll be there till about this year, imagine about the 15th of July, then they'll go out on these East Mountains. You can see where the snow is up there. They go over that mountain and down on the east side. They stay there till about the 1st of October. And then they come off with their lambs. It'll weigh probably 95-100 pounds. Then about, before the 15th of October, we sell the lambs.
The solitary sheep herder following the herds up into the mountains is an important character in local lore. Dee Blackburn sings Sheep Herder Blues, a traditional song about the herder's life. As he sings, notice the pine tree-shrouded cemetery about a quarter of a mile off US 89 on your right, visible near milepost 235. It is the Ephraim Pioneer Cemetery.
All I'll do be a shepherd and breathe the mountain air with my tower in my teeth and sweet kick in my hair. I love to ride the horses on the mountainside so fast, looking for the lost sheep with a whisker on my ankle. I love to do the cooking, to fly them up and slow, wash the greasy dishes and mix the sourdough. I love to thread around and think long, long hours away, but the thing I'd like to do the most is be back home to stay. Oh, to be a shepherd and bleed the mountain air with mountain cattle in the teeth and sheep pitch in my hair. The wagon boss was 3 weeks late, the burro's in bed 4 days. The dogs are also footed, but sheep have got a grave. I've been stranded on the Arctic, frostbitten to the bone, but I never knew what misery was till I left my dear old home. I love to be a shepherd and count the sheep each day, learn to spot fly blows from a half a mile away. If you ask me what I'd like the most, this is what I'd say. Just shove these sheep right up your nose, I'm going home to stay. Oh, I'll to be a shepherd and breathe the mountain air with my cattle in my teeth and sheep pick in my hair.
The Ephraim Pioneer Cemetery, founded in 1854, is one of the most historically important in the valley. Many of those buried there are natives of Denmark, and it is possible to find Danish language inscriptions on some of the older grave markers. Immediately after you enter Ephraim, you'll see another cemetery on the right, next to the highway. It is the Ephraim City Cemetery, in use since 1903. Ephraim, population about 4,000, is the San Pete Valley's largest town and its commercial center. It is also the home of Snow College. The great white letter S on the hillside to your left represents the college. Ephraim was founded in 1854 as a Walker War fort by refugees from the southern part of the county. Most of its original settlers were Scandinavians. In 1900, the town was 90% Scandinavian. Although Danes were the most numerous, Ephraim also attracted Swedish and Norwegian pioneers. Ephraim has a number of historic structures, including a row of buildings on the left near the center of town. Within a block, you'll see the 1871 Greek Revival-style Ephraim Cooperative Mercantile, locally called the Co-op. Its next-door granary, and the arched brick building that is the old bishop's storehouse. The co-op and the granary are built of native yellow oolitic limestone. The co-op once housed the Ephraim United Order Cooperative Mercantile Association. This association was the local affiliate of Zion's Cooperative Mercantile Institution. The ZCMI was established by the Mormon Church so that its members could trade with each other and barter farm and other products for needed goods. The co-op is on the corner of Main Street, US 89, and 100 North. After extensive restoration, the co-op and the granary are back in use. The co-op is now a cooperative craft store operated by the San Pete Trade Association, and the granary is the gallery of the Central Utah Art Center. Snow College, founded in 1888 as the church-owned San Pete Steak Academy, is Ephraim's largest employer. It attracts many students from outside of the county. In 1932, it became a state two-year college. The first academy classes were held on the second floor of the co-op. Today, Snow College occupies 26 buildings on 127 acres of the east side of Ephraim. Just off the Snow College campus, you can find St. Jude's Roman Catholic Church. Most of the Mexican Americans living in the San Pete Valley are Catholic, and many are from the Mexican state of Guanajuato. They represent a large and growing part of the valley's non-Mormon population. Every Sunday, St. Jude's serves this immigrant community by holding a very popular Spanish language mass, complete with beautiful music. Ephraim celebrates its Scandinavian heritage every Memorial Day weekend during the Scandinavian Festival. Co-op manager June Doak Crane explains the festival's origins.
I wasn't around then. It was 20 years ago, possibly. And it started out very small in this area. They put a tent up between these two buildings, and these buildings were not completed. The good cooks in town made chicken dumpling soup and apple skivers, that's a Scandinavian pancake. And they sold food on the lawns, and some people came, and they just kept doing it each year and building with different activities, with the folk dancing and the maypole braiding and a parade. It really started after Rambouillet Day. Rambouillet Day was an agricultural celebration for the same weekend. It's gone from that to the attendance of about 8,000 people. And they have food booths and craft booths and lots of music. There's still the maypole dancing, the Scandinavian dancing, the parade. It's a fun celebration. Mm-hmm. We've tried to keep it traditional. A lot of people want to come in with the commercial, but we pretty well turn that down and keep it as traditional and as Champaign County as we can.
Off the highway to your left, watch for a classic example of a Mormon hay derrick. Used for stacking hay and straw, hay derricks were one of the most common implements in traditional Mormon agricultural communities. They were so characteristic that they were often called Mormon stackers by non-Mormons in the Intermountain West. Although their origin is uncertain, they are remarkably similar to a Danish device called a halmkron for stacking sheaves of grain during harvest. Although no longer used, many derricks are preserved as relics of a simpler time. Music is an important component of the Scandinavian Days Festival. Naira Nielsen of Ephraim often plays traditional Scandinavian melodies on her accordion. Here she plays a traditional Danish dance tune, Vita Manikaniba, Little Man in a Fix. By now, you should be able to see the most important and imposing structure in the San Pete Valley, the Manti Temple. Many people consider the Manti Temple the most beautiful of the Mormon temples. It was designed by architect William Folsom and built entirely by volunteer labor from 1877 through 1879. It was the third Mormon temple completed in Utah. Much of the work was done by skilled Scandinavian craftsmen. The Manti Temple's great wooden spiral staircase is unique. The site of the Manti Temple was chosen by Brigham Young. Although it is not official church doctrine, many Mormons believe that Young was instructed to choose this site by the angel Moroni himself. As you approach the Manti Temple, you can see the limestone quarry on the hill behind it. It is the source of the stone used to build the temple. During 1997, more of this stone was quarried for the restoration of one of the temple's towers. Across the highway from the temple is the Manti Cemetery, another of Utah's important pioneer burial grounds. Among those buried in the Manti Cemetery are Peter O. Hansen, who translated the Book of Mormon into Danish, its first translation into a language other than English. A.C. Smith and William Fowler, who wrote several of the most popular Mormon hymns, are also buried there. And you can also find grave markers for veterans of the Indian Wars and of the Mormon Battalion, who marched in the war against Mexico. It is said that Moroni had previously chosen it as a temple site when he lived as a man in ancient America. Manti, population about 2,600, is the seat of San Pete County and the oldest town in the valley. It was named after a city described in the Book of Mormon as the site of an important battle. Today, Manti is the site of the annual Mormon Miracle Pageant, presented during 2 weeks every summer since 1967. Downtown Manti has its share of historic structures, including the 1905 Tithing Office, or Bishop's Storehouse. It stands on your left at Main Street and 100 North. Most impressive is the 1879 Gothic Revival Tabernacle, on your right at Main and 100 South. Built of native limestone, it too was designed by William Folsom. Most of the private homes along Main Street are also of historical and cultural value. The storefront True and Living Church of Jesus Christ of the Last Days stands on Main Street to your left, just before the tabernacle. It houses worshipers of a new and dissenting denomination who have detached themselves from the Mormon Church because of doctrinal disagreements. Robert Tibbs is a young Mormon bishop who teaches church seminary in Manti. He is an expert on the Manti Cemetery and the people who are buried there. He can stand by any number of the graves and expound eloquently on the history and character of those who lie below. Here, Bishop Tibbs has stopped at the grave of Australian-born composer William Fowler. He recalls the privation and suffering that marked the 5 years that Fowler lived in the San Pete Valley before his death in 1864. The mountains that you begin to see up ahead in the distance as Mr. Tibbs speaks are the Pavant Range. You will also pass, on your left, near milepost 221, the Crystal or Warm Springs. They are shrouded in old poplar trees.
Whether or not William Fowler, violinist, had much earthly goods for which to give thanks, he brought gratitude to the hearts of millions for giving the LDS Church the words to one of his favorite hymns. He was baptized in Australia, comes here. And on the route, on the ship, on the way here, he gets sick. And never again does he have health enough to perform the duties of supplying and sustaining and supporting his family. And he did play the music, play his violin for people, and it was a very difficult thing. He bore witness in his song, in We Thank Thee, O God, for a Prophet, his love for God and for the prophet, and their love of sustaining that prophet. I'd just like to have you listen to the words, okay? We thank Thee, O God, for a prophet to guide us in these latter days. We thank Thee for sending the gospel to lighten our minds with its rays. We thank Thee for every blessing bestowed by Thy bounteous hands. We feel it a pleasure to serve Thee and love to obey Thy commands.
A walk through any of the San Pete Valley's cemeteries reveals just how many of the Scandinavian settlers had the same or similar names. All of the Peter Petersons and Jens Christiansens caused confusion. To keep them straight, people resorted to the old country custom of nicknames. Sometimes they were simply occupational, other times humorous. Virginia Nielsen of Ephraim explains.
Some of them had nicknames that were so divergent that you couldn't even tell they were related. For instance, the Ringling brothers, Andrew Aha Anderson and Orson Anderson, went by these other name, Ringling Brothers. Otto by Yingo Anderson. Bill Buck. Now let's see. 5, 6, 7, and 8 were brothers. But they all had different names. They called them Chris Seller, Little Pete, and Ole Miller, and they didn't know, they weren't known by any other name. And Olaf Coffeepot Thursby was devoted to his coffee pot. Pete Woodenhead Hansen, Tulsi Pete, Tunny Antone Christensen. One meeting, the presiding elder called on Brother Peterson and to give the prayer, and half the audience raised up. And he said, no, I mean, Peter Peterson, half of them sat down. There was quite a conflict there in designating who was who.
From the 1890s through the 1930s, San Pete towns were periodically devastated by flash floods. In response to the flash floods, the U.S. Forest Service established its Great Basin Experiment Station on the Wasatch Plateau in 1912 to study and develop better range and forest management. It was the Forest Service's first environmental research facility in the nation. Co-managed by the Forest Service and Snow College, the station is now the Great Basin Environmental Education Center, and it is open to the public. It lies about 10 miles southeast of Ephraim on Canyon Road. On this route, you will pass through the village of Sterling, population about 275. Founded in 1881, it was originally two communities, Sterling, along the present-day highway, and Pettyville, about a half mile to the west. In the middle of Sterling, a left turn on Palisade Road leads 2 miles to Palisade State Park and Palisade Lake. As you drive through town, watch for the wide gully that contains 6 Mile Creek. This gully was caused by a flood. 1.5 miles beyond Sterling, State Highway 137 veers off to the left. 3.5 miles down 137 lies the village of Mayfield, population 475, founded in 1873. San Pete's biggest tourist attraction occurs every June, when the whole south end of San Pete County fills up as 100,000 people come to see Manti's renowned Mormon miracle pageant. It is held on the grounds of the Manti Temple. The pageant is based on a script written by Grace Johnson of Ephraim that was worked into a play by Helen and Morgan Dyring of Manti. The pageant depicts the story of the ancient Israelites of the Western Hemisphere, as explained in the Book of Mormon. It continues into the history of the Mormon Church, from its origins in New York State, through its persecutions and westward trek, to its eventual establishment in Utah. Although organized and performed entirely by volunteers, the pageant is a highly professional presentation, using the latest in theatrical technology and a cast of nearly 400. To your right is 9 Mile Reservoir, a source of irrigation water and a favorite of trout fishers. The area near the reservoir is a transition zone where the San Pete Valley ends, transforming due south into the Arapeen Valley and westward along U.S. 89 into the Sevier Valley. The first Mormon miracle pageant was performed at the San Pete County Fairgrounds in Manti in 1967. Its organizers consider its name propitious due to an event at its first performance. Helen Dyring explains.
We had practiced hard and we'd worked hard and we'd given it everything we could for a couple of weeks. The time came to present the pageant. The skies got really dark. It looked like it was going to rain. We sat there just hoping and praying that it wouldn't rain, but it did start to sprinkle. And the people with their instruments in the orchestra started to put them away. They didn't want them to get wet. And the choir people were folding their music up and putting it away. And our state president, he stepped forward and offered a prayer. And he prayed that the elements would be stayed so we could present this pageant that we'd worked on so very hard. You know, soon the clouds parted. And it was raining at the west and the east and the north and the south. But it was clear in the area we were doing the pageant. And we were able to complete it. As soon as it was over, before we could get the curtains down and the scenery hauled away, it just poured down. So we felt that we were very blessed, and we've often said, had we been rained out that first night, there never would have been a Mormon Miracle Pageant. And that was 31 years ago.
9/10 of a mile past the 9 Mile Reservoir's earthen dam, or just past milepost 214, you cross the Sand Pitch River again, as it flows toward its confluence with the Sevier. The collection of dispersed houses and farm buildings on the left at milepost 213 is the hamlet of Christianburg. The white-faced cliff behind Christianburg is Chalk Hill, once the site of a chalk quarry. In addition to raising sheep and turkeys, San Pete County has always been known for its cattle production. Here at the southern end of the county, there is ample evidence of that tradition along both sides of the highway. Joe Frischknecht, a sixth-generation San Pete rancher, regularly expresses how he feels about his chosen lifestyle by reciting poetry. Listen as he shares some verses from One Cowboy's Prayer.
An old cowboy came riding home. The sky was looking gray at twilight in a drizzling rain at the end of a long, hard day. He pulled the saddle off his horse, took curry comb and brush, and groomed him good from head to hoof. He wasn't in no rush. Then poured him out a can of oats and several flakes of hay, and then filled up the water trough and put his tack away. He said, "Lord, I thank you for this day and for looking after me, and thank you for the range out there as far as I can see, and thanks for the rain today. We needed it a lot. It sure was getting awful dry, the weather being hot. And thanks for that horse. He's much more than transportation. Just like the mountains, trees, and grass, he's part of your creation. And Lord, I thank you most of all for this good life I lead. Why, city rush would drive me mad with traffic I don't need. And though I work from dawn till dark each and every day, I get rewards that far exceed a poor cowpuncher's pay. And though I don't get to church like lots of people do, I value the relationship that's just between us two."
Though they take their heritage seriously, San Peters aren't afraid to have a little fun at their own expense. Singer and guitarist Dee Blackburn of Moroni shares a song that old-timers used to sing when they felt like poking a little fun at small-town life. The song tells about some of Moroni's well-known local characters.
It was midnight in Moroni, not a streetcar was in sight. I walked into the drugstore to get myself a light. There behind the counter was a woman old and gray that used to peddle shoestrings on the road to Mandalay. Ain't we crazy, oh ain't we crazy, that's the way we pass time away. Ain't we crazy, oh ain't we crazy, I could sing this song all night today. I went up to the high school, I opened wide the door, and there old Stafford Sumption was sitting on the floor. Walked up to the fountain, I thought I'd get a drink, and there old Cy Christensen was painting the walls bright pink. Ain't we crazy, oh ain't we crazy, that's the way we pass time away. Ain't we crazy, oh ain't we crazy, I could sing this song all night today. There was an awful racket. It rang throughout the land. It was old Ray Anderson warming up his band. Windows started cracking and the glass began to break. Out of the restroom came a Irvin G. It trembling like a snake. Ain't we crazy? Oh, ain't we crazy? That's the way we pass the time away. Ain't we crazy? Oh, ain't we crazy? I could sing this song all night today.
Our tour ends when you reach the stop sign at Highway 28 in Gunnison. Founded in 1859, Gunnison was named after Captain John W. Gunnison, a Transcontinental Railroad surveyor who was killed nearby in an 1853 confrontation with Paiute Indians. Gunnison's population is about 2,000, and its largest employer is the state correctional facility that you'll probably notice on your right just before entering town. Also of interest is the short-lived Jewish colony of Clarion that was founded nearby during the early part of the century. Today, all that remains of this cooperative community is a few foundations and a couple of grave markers. If this is your first visit to San Pete County, why not head back and re-explore the places you drove by as you listen to the tape? The people of the San Pete Valley hope you come back soon. The San Pete Valley Tour was produced by the Folk Arts Program of the Utah Arts Council in cooperation with the San Pete Heritage Council. Major funding was provided by the Utah Pioneer Communities Program of the Utah Department of Community and Economic Development. Research, interviews, writing, and editing were by Jens Lund. Annie Hatch transcribed the interviews. Susie Nilsson of Ephraim, Mont Bona of Mount Pleasant, and Kent Christensen of Moroni provided local coordination. The project director was Carol Edison. Production of the tape took place at Jack Straw Productions in Seattle, with engineering by Tom Stiles, and at WT Recording Studios in Salt Lake City, with engineering by Kent Krockenberg. I'm Phil Reeson. Thank you for traveling with us. We hope you have a safe journey.